Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past, our inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune, a fortune compounded of many things. Of a strange tea party in Boston Harbor, the Minutemen at Lexington and Concord, and the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. The great sea victories of Old Ironsides. And Peter Cooper demonstrating the first American locomotive. Let us now go back to a significant period in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. This is the story of a Navy man and of an island near San Francisco. First, the man. An indication of his character came during the War of 1812, when he was a young midshipman aboard the Essex, first American warship ever to enter Pacific waters. On July 4th, 1813, Captain Porter faced a problem which concerned this young man.
Midshipman Farragut.
Yes, sir, Captain Porter?
We're short of captains to take command of the vessels we've captured. I am now compelled to draw upon my midshipmen for prize masters.
Yes, sir.
Think you can handle a prize crew?
Yes, sir.
You're rather young.
I'm almost 12, sir, and I've been a midshipman for 2.5 years.
Yes, I know. I guess you'll do. Farragut, I want you to take command of the vessel Barclay. Join the squadron led by the Essex Junior and take her into the harbor at Valparaiso. You think you can do it?
Yes, sir. I'm certain I can.
I'm leaving the ship's former captain on board to help navigate the Barclay.
It will not be necessary, sir.
Maybe not, but I don't want to take any more chances than I have to. You may board your ship and take command.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, you. What are you doing aboard my ship?
I'm here to take command. Midshipman Farragut, by order of Captain Porter.
Oh, so they've sent a cabin boy to run my ship, hmm?
Perhaps you misunderstood my rank, Captain. I am Midshipman Farragut.
I don't care if you're a commodore. You best get out of the way, you'll find yourself off New Zealand in the morning.
I think you're quite wrong there. The other ships of the convoy are underway. Captain, I desire the main topsail filled in order that we may close with the Essex Junior.
I'll shoot down any man who dares to touch a rope without my orders.
You will give the order, Captain.
I'll go my own course. No intention of trusting myself with any blasted nutshell. I'm going below for my pistols. When I come back, I don't want to see you on my quarterdeck.
Mr. Kingsbury, will you come here?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps you overheard my conversation with the captain?
Yes, sir. Couldn't help it.
He's a violent-tempered old man. I think he's trying to bluster me into surrendering my authority. I don't intend to be bluffed.
We're very glad to hear that, sir.
Mr. Kingsbury, I want the main topsail filled.
Aye, aye, sir.
You, down there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm giving you fair warning, Captain. If you come up with your pistols, you'll be thrown overboard.
I'd like to see a youngster like you try it.
I'll not have to try it. My crew will handle it for me. How about it, men?
Aye, aye, aye.
Captain, you'll come up by the time I count 10, and you will not have your pistols. 1, 2, 3.
All right. I'm coming.
You will keep your hands at your side, please.
Yes, sir.
I trust, Captain, there's no longer any question in your mind about what shall be done on this ship.
No, Mr. Farragut. You're in charge here.
The youthful midshipman had no further trouble from the captain, and he brought the Barclay to safe anchorage in Valparaiso Harbor. This was the beginning of a long naval career of the man, David Glasgow Farragut. Now for the island. It is located at the northern end of San Francisco Bay in San Pablo Bay. For nearly half a century, it bore the uninspired name of Flat Island. Then in 1830s, General Mariano Guadalupe Vallejo had a reason for changing the name of the island.
Hold that, Pablo. You do not think you have too many cattle loaded on the ferry boat?
Oh, no, General Vallejo. We take usually this many.
But the boat is really only a raft. She does not look safe to take all those cattle across to the Venecia.
Oh, never fear, General. Under this deck are plenty of stout whale oil barrels. The raft, she is unsinkable.
What about the sail?
The boat sails nicely with the wind, General. We'll be across Carquine Straits and into Venecia before you can know it.
Very well, Pablo. And take good care of that white mare. She is a great favorite with me.
Si, General. We take good care.
The sail-powered raft scudded nicely before the breeze. All went well until the primitive ferry boat reached midstream. Then a wind squall struck the craft, and much of the livestock was plunged into the water. Some were rescued, others lost. General Vallejo's favorite white mare was not among those rescued, and the general was most unhappy. Then, a few months later, an excited visitor rushed to General Vallejo's home.
General Vallejo! General Vallejo!
Un momento, señor. Yes, amigo?
Your white mare, General Vallejo. I have seen her.
But that is impossible, amigo. She was lost when the ferry boat upset.
But I have seen her, General. I have seen her.
Where?
On that island in San Pablo Bay. The one called Isla Plana. Flat Island.
Isla Plana?
Si.
Madre mia. Amigo, if what you say is true, we rechristen the island. It will have a new name. Isla de la Yegua. Island of the Mare.
General Vallejo found his favorite white mare on the island, peacefully grazing among a large herd of elk, and Mare Island became its official name. Meanwhile, David Glasgow Farragut continued in the Navy. After his service in the War of 1812, he had taken part in suppressing the West Indian pirates and had engaged in the Mexican War. Although he had become a commander, none of these operations had given him a real chance to rise above other men. One day, in the summer of 1854, Commodore Smith, chief of the Bureau of Yards and Docks in Washington, D.C., had an important visitor, the Secretary of the Navy, Mr. Dobbin.
Commodore Smith, I don't mean to trouble you, but I'm rather worried about that Pacific Coast assignment.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Secretary. Well, you needn't worry about that. I've picked the ideal man for it, Commander Farragut.
Farragut? I don't believe I know him.
I consider him the ideal man for this assignment, Mr. Dobbin. He's resourceful, intelligent, and has sound judgment.
When may I meet him, Commodore?
Well, he's been ordered to report here without delay.
I say, I don't care. The President himself is in there. I have orders to report promptly to Commodore Smith.
Commander Farragut reporting, sir.
Well, good morning, Farragut. I trust you didn't have too much difficulty in getting in to see me.
Oh, sir, not too much.
Mr. Dobbin, this is Commander Farragut. Commander, Mr. Dobbin, Secretary of the Navy.
How do you do, Commander?
How do you do? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Secretary. I didn't mean to break in on you like this. That idiotic guard didn't mention it.
Quite all right, Commander Farragut. I like to see a man accomplish his mission, even if he has to brush past an idiotic guard.
Yes, sir.
Commander Farragut, your new assignment. You're to be the first commandant of the Pacific Navy Yard.
The Pacific Navy Yard? There isn't one.
No, not yet. You will build it.
Very good, sir. Where will it be built?
Well, about 2 years ago, a surveying party headed by Commodore John Drake Sloat was sent to locate the best possible site for a Navy Yard in the San Francisco area.
Yes, sir.
They selected Mare Island. That's in the northernmost part of San Francisco Bay, that part called San Pablo Bay.
I see. And what's there now, Commodore?
A long, low, flat island and a floating dock.
Our nation now faces on two oceans, and there's need in the West for fighting ships and a base from which to operate.
Yes, sir.
Commander Farragut, you'll have to make exceptional use of your own judgment and initiative. You cannot wait for our approval on every matter.
Yes, sir, I understand.
And you'll be on your own when it comes to finding nails and wood and bricks, animals and workers and so on.
How much money is available?
Congress has appropriated $291,000 to build the Mare Island Navy Yard.
That should be enough to make a good start.
On August 19, 1854, Commander Farragut and his wife, Virginia, together with their son, Loyal, sailed for California. 10 days later, they reached the Nicaraguan port of San Juan del Norte, crossed Nicaragua by carriage and riverboat, and took another steamer from the Pacific side. Their ship steamed in through the Golden Gate at San Francisco on September 14th, and the following day, the Farraguts arrived at Vallejo, late the capital of California. They hired a rowboat to take them across the Napa River to Mare Island.
So that's Mare Island. Not very impressive looking. I'm afraid, son, you and your mother are going to find it rather lonesome over there.
Oh, no. We'll have fun. Say, Dad, what's that thing sticking up over there?
Oh, that, I believe, must be the floating dry dock.
It's big, isn't it?
Yeah, has to be to handle the larger ships.
Oh, look. There's a man over on the wharf waving to us.
Ahoy, Commander Farragut.
Yes?
Welcome to Mare Island.
Well, thank you. We'll be alongside your wharf in a moment.
Sorry, I couldn't come over to get you. I had a docking job to do. Here, sir, hand me that line. I'll make the boat fast. There you are. Now, can I give you a hand, Commander?
Thanks, I can make it.
Permit me to introduce myself. I'm Hanscom of the Dry Dock Company.
Glad to know you, Mr. Hanscom. This is my wife, my son, Loyal.
How do you do?
Your firm is operating the floating dry dock, is it?
That's right, sir, under lease until the Navy accepts delivery from the New York company that made it.
Mr. Hanscom, are there any living accommodations on Mare Island for me and my family?
Well, sir, at present there isn't a house fit for you to live in. Of course, the squatters have put up some buildings.
There are squatters on government property?
Well, sir, I've warned them that they had no business building on the island or even trying to live here, but they haven't paid any attention to me.
I shall handle them very shortly, Mr. Hanscom.
Yes, sir. Now, about living accommodations, we can put you up at the Dry Dock Company's house if you like. There's room enough.
I'd appreciate it very much, Mr. Hanscom, but we shall impose on you only overnight. I've ordered the USS Warren to be moved tomorrow from Sausalito here. There should be accommodations on her.
Yes, sir. But you're welcome to what we have as long as you need it.
Thank you. How about labor in this area, Mr. Hanscom? The workmen dependable?
Well, sir, plenty of men around Vallejo, but I wouldn't count too much on their dependability.
Oh, why do you say that?
Well, don't forget, Commander Farragut, it was only 5 years ago they found gold on Sutter's Creek, and the fever hasn't died down yet. Just let a rumor start that a gold strike has been made around here, and every able-bodied man will drop whatever he's doing, grab a pickaxe and a pan, and head right for the hills.
Not very encouraging.
Oh, other times, sir, there's fine workers you'll find anywhere.
Well, maybe in between gold rushes, we can build a Navy yard.
Good morning, Commander Farragut. Have a good night's sleep.
Fine, thank you, Mr. Hanscom.
I've sent word to the 5 squatters to be here by 8 o'clock. They should be along soon.
Good, good. This is certainly a bright, clear day.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. But you'll notice, too, that's also very calm. Not a good day to trial a sail a ship up the bay, sir.
Oh, you think the USS Warren may be delayed in coming up from Sausalito,
Well, she'll never make it under sail, sir.
I sent orders to Lieutenant McDougal to bring in the ship to Mare Island today. I presume he could hire a steam tug.
Yes, Commander, yes, only towing is kind of expensive around here.
Oh, how much would a tow job like that cost?
From Sausalito to Mare Island, I imagine around $500.
Job like that in Norfolk or New York would be considerably less.
I know that, Commander Farragut, but everything out here is high, from sugar and flour to steam tugs and harness. You see, sir, most everything we need has to come around Cape Horn, and the freight rates for that 14,000-mile trip are very high.
Yes, I can appreciate they would be. Those men coming over there, Mr. Hanscom, are they the squatters?
Yes, they are, Commander, and they're on time, too. Men, this is Commander Farragut. He's the boss of the Mare Island Navy Yard.
I've been informed that you are trespassing illegally on property of the United States government.
Please, boss, make the talk simple, huh?
Oh, very well. I understand that you have been living on land which belongs to the United States.
Well, sure, boss. We're Americans, and we live in the United States.
Let me try to explain it. When the government takes over some land for its use, other people can't live on it.
No? Why not? We don't get in your way, boss.
No, it's not a question of you getting in my way, men. This island has been purchased by the United States for the use of a Navy Yard. Therefore, anyone not belonging to the Navy or the Navy Yard must leave the island.
How about the houses the men build? Well,
they had no legal right to build any houses.
Yeah, but they did, and they spent good money to do it.
What's your name?
Oh, excuse me, boss. My name is Antonio Vera.
Are you the official representative of this group?
Well, I don't think so, boss. I used to speak for them.
I see. Very well. Now, about these houses, what are they and who owns them?
Well, a fine large house has been built by Mr. Roy. He planned to have a boarding house for the dock workmen.
It's a well-built place, Commander. Could be converted to a temporary workshop.
Very well, I'll inspect it later. How about you, Vera? Have you a house?
Oh, no, boss. No. I build a house for others. I don't build for Vera. A house would make Vera too permanent.
I see. You're a carpenter.
That's right, boss.
All right, man. I shall inspect all the buildings you have erected. Although the Navy is under no obligation to buy those buildings or to pay you anything for them, since you're here illegally, if we can use them, I shall pay you what I believe they're worth. Is that fair?
It's all right.
All right, you can go back ahead and pack your things. You must be off this island by sundown tonight. Is that clear?
Ah, sure. All right.
Commander, that was a stroke of genius offering to buy those squatters' houses.
It's the only fair thing to do, Mr. Hanscom. The government should never take over a man's property without paying him for it. That afternoon, as Mr. Hanscom had predicted, a steam tug had to tow the USS Warren from Sausalito to her mooring place near the dry dock. Until special quarters could be built on the ship, the Farraguts continued to live in the dry dock company's house. The presence of the USS Warren gave a military atmosphere to Mare Island, but something essential was lacking.
You sent for me, boss?
Yes, I did,
Vera. No, I didn't do nothing wrong, boss. I got off the island just like
this
you said.
This has nothing to do with your having been a squatter. How'd you like to work for the United States Navy?
The United States Navy? Oh, no, boss. No. I wouldn't be any good to you. You know, Vera gets seasick just like anything.
Now, I don't mean as a sailor. As a carpenter, right here.
Oh, you mean I don't got to go for a boat ride?
No. This is the Mare Island Navy Yard, and we should have an American flag flying over the island. To do that, we must have a flagpole.
Flagpole, sure.
You say you're a carpenter. Think you could build a flagpole?
Oh, sure, boss. I do you a fine flagpole.
All right, Vera. You're the first official employee of the Mare Island Navy Yard. That should be quite an honor.
Well, Vera doesn't care about the honor, just so he gets paid.
You will, Vera. Don't you worry about that.
Carpenter Vera made a fine flagpole, and on October 3rd, 1854, in the presence of a dozen workmen, the American flag was first raised over Mare Island while the Warren fired a 13-gun salute. The workers raced against time in building temporary storehouses and a blacksmith shop. It was absolutely necessary to get men and materials under cover before the rainy season commenced. On the evening of October 4th came the first rain of the season. In their jury-rigged quarters built forward of the main cabin of the Warren, the Farraguts did their best to be optimistic.
Well, thank heaven almost everything's under cover now, Virginia. That the rain held off as long as it did is about the first break we've had.
Well, why do you say that?
Oh, there's so many things to be done.
And you will do them, Commander.
Oh, I suppose so, in time. I've now been on Mare Island nearly 3 weeks, and the multitude of wants is so great I scarcely know at which end to commence.
Well, you mustn't be discouraged.
Oh, I'm not discouraged. Only I'll admit I'm a bit perplexed at these plans Commodore Smith gave me.
They're difficult to follow?
Not merely difficult, my dear. In some cases, they're impossible. For instance, on these plans, the stables and the machine shop are shown exactly the same size. Mm-hmm. In the specifications, one is to be 360 feet long, while the other is only 250 feet.
Wow. Well, that makes quite a bit of difference.
And the plans show one building starting on level ground at the water's edge and extending back to a plateau, which is nearly 30 feet higher.
What will you do?
Well, I'll build it just that way, even though we have to excavate those 30 feet of soil. With only horses and oxen, carts and scrapers, it's going to be a slow job.
But you can do it?
Oh, of course, my dear. What the Navy wants, the Navy shall have.
First payday was October 15th, and Dr. Richard Ashe, Navy agent at San Francisco, brought $2,300 in gold and silver coin from the new mint at San Francisco to pay Carpenter Vera and the other workers. But by the end of that October came a real crisis in Mare Island's history.
Bad news, Commander Farragut.
Oh, Dr. Ash, what's that?
We haven't any money to meet the payroll. My funds are almost exhausted.
What? I've sent my estimates down to you regularly.
And I've sent on the requisitions to Washington, but the money hasn't come through.
I don't understand it. Before I left Washington, Commodore Smith said Congress had appropriated $291,000 for this Mare Island Navy Yard.
That may be, Commander, but no money has come through.
What money have you been using up to now?
Well, I had about $20,000 left over as extra pay from the Mexican War.
That should be ample to pay the payroll?
Yes, to meet the payroll, yes. But I've spent nearly all of it for materials and equipment and for horses and carts, and we still owe thousands of dollars in bills around San Francisco.
Well, Dr. Ash, we shall have to put the workmen on half pay and try to carry on a credit basis.
It won't be easy, Commander.
I know it. It's the only thing we can do.
Although the workmen were put on half pay, the problem was due to become even more serious. By December 1st, Commander Farragut was reduced to having to borrow money to meet his own personal needs. Dr. Ash brought no good news from San Francisco.
Well, there's the 100 in gold you asked me to borrow for you, Commander Farragut.
Thank you, Dr. Ash. Still no word from Washington?
No, sir. And I don't understand it.
Well, neither do I. Dr. Ash, there's only one thing we can do. Pay off the workmen and discharge them.
Oh, I'm sorry. It can't be done, Commander. I don't have the money to pay them off.
Come in.
You send it for me, boss?
Yes, Mr. Vera. I understand you represent the workmen of Mare Island.
That's right, boss. They asked me to find out about their pay.
Yes, well, Dr. Ash and I were just discussing it. The Navy hasn't sent us any money, and we can't pay you yet.
You can't pay you? That's too bad, boss.
I'm afraid we'll have to discharge all of you.
Oh, no, 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 boss. We don't want to be discharged.
We haven't any money to pay you.
That's all right. The men say they're willing to work until the money comes.
They are?
That's all right. They say United States still has A1 credit with them.
Good. Good. Dr. Ash, do you think you can purchase materials on credit in San Francisco?
I don't know, Commander. I'll try.
Do the best you can, Dr. Ash. I don't want work on Mare Island to lag any more than is absolutely unavoidable. And Vera, will you thank the workmen for their decision to go on working?
Oh, sure, boss. You know, if they work, they don't get into trouble. It's much better all the way around.
On December 20th, some funds finally were received at Mare Island from Washington, enough to make it a somewhat merry Christmas for the workers. And on February 2nd, enough cash arrived to pay all hands up to date. Reason for the money crisis finally came to light. The requisitions from Mare Island were not in proper and perfect order. In the future, they were. In the months following, Mare Island's facilities expanded and became more complete. Commander Farragut was promoted to captain on September 4th, 1856, almost 2 years after he had started to build the Navy Yard on the Pacific. Captain Farragut had one great ambition, and in October 1856, he wrote the Secretary of the Navy.
It would be a matter of great pride to me, sir, to be able to say I had not only sailed in the first American man of war that ever coasted the western shores of America, but had the honor of constructing the first dockyard and building the first ship of war ever launched in these waters.
But the Navy lacked funds for warship construction that year, and Captain Farragut's request was marked file. In May 1858, believing that he had accomplished his mission at Mare Island, he wrote the Navy Secretary that he was ready for sea duty. On July 16, 1858, command of the Mare Island Navy Yard was turned over by Captain Farragut to his successor, Captain Cunningham. And 3 days later, Farragut said farewell to the Mare Island workers and sailed away to keep an appointment with destiny, to take a hero's place in our nation's history for his exploits in Mobile Bay. In 1866, a grateful nation made him the first admiral in the history of the United States. Mare Island, after the excellent start given it by Farragut, also went on to great things. Since 1859, when it completed the first warship built on the Pacific coast, this Navy Yard has turned out a total of 490 naval craft, ranging in size from tugboats to the battleship California. In World War I, Mare Island set a world's record when the destroyer Ward was launched in exactly 17 days. 23 years later, that same destroyer, still a staunch fighting ship, fired the first shot of World War II, sinking a Japanese submarine at Pearl Harbor, December 7, 1941. Through four wars, this fourth largest Navy Yard has done its full share in building warships, repairing battle-damaged vessels, and reconditioning ships of the United States Navy. Mare Island Navy Yard, which this month celebrates a century of service to the fleet and its first commandant, David Glasgow Farragut, have a lasting place in our inheritance. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. We are privileged this evening to hear from the past National Commander of the American Legion, Department of California, Mr. Lewis K. Goff.
The American Legion is proud to salute Mare Island in the event of its centennial, which is being celebrated in Vallejo, California from September 16th through the 19th. As a Navy man and a native Californian, I am particularly happy to participate in this NBC presentation of Inheritance, which has so well depicted the record of the splendid and industrious service performed by the people of Mare Island during these 100 years since Admiral Farragut founded it as the first naval establishment here in our Pacific coast. The Navy is well aware of the unusual speed and competence with which this naval establishment serves our fleet in the building and repairing of ships. A veteran who has seen duty in any of the armed forces knows the vital importance of well-serviced and well-built equipment. The unsurpassed record of our country in the production of planes, tanks, submarines, and in fact, all the equipment of defense is one of the most significant reasons that the free world is still free. It is also one of the most potent present defenses against the possibility of enemy aggression. The wealth of the inheritance, which is ours, is preserved because reliable hands and believing hearts maintain it. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness remain our unalienable rights because the citizens of these United States are and always have been able to sustain and foster them.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis K. Goff. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of history to a time when Americans, dreaming of the future, forged that which we possess today. Today's story, A Salute to Mare Island, was written by Ted Weir, based in part on materials supplied by Lieutenant Commander Arnold S. Lott of the United States Navy, and featured Whitfield Connor as David Glasgow Farragut. Included in the cast in order of their appearance were Howard Culver, Ronnie Liss, Victor Rodman, Herb Ellis, Nestor Paiva, Don Diamond, James McCallion, Louis Lethierry, Ann Seton, and Jay Novello. This program was directed by Art Jacobson. The original music was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. Inheritance is produced for the National Broadcasting Company and the American Legion by Albert McCleary. This is John Lang speaking. This is the NBC Radio Network.